Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
This podcast was recorded Thursday, August 14th at 10:32 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like Sherrod Brown will actually come out and say himself that he is running for U.S. Senate. So far, we've only heard from people, quote, close to him. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who look for your vote every year, every couple years, every 4 years. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, an interesting meeting at the White House leads to our Snollygoster of the Week award. But first, we have been waiting for months for this decision. Ohio Democrats have been waiting for months for this decision. Democrats planning 2026 campaigns have been waiting months to find out what Sherrod Brown plans to do. Well, now we know. At least we think we know. Sherrod Brown is going to run for U.S. Senate, the place where he walked out of just 8 months ago after he lost a re-election bid to Republican Bernie Marino. Now other stars will start to align. Now that Sherrod Brown is running for Senate, Tim Ryan can decide whether or not to run for governor. Former Ohio House Minority Leader Allison Russo can decide what statewide office she might want to target. And of course, former Ohio Health Director Amy Acton, who has been running for governor, the Brown announcement might mean that she will remain in the race. To break this all down, joining us right now is Kyle Condic. He is the managing editor of Sabatot's Crystal Ball, a political newsletter published by the University of Virginia Center for Politics. Kyle is an Ohio native, went to Ohio University, studied journalism there. He also covered Ohio news and politics and worked in Ohio politics. So he's very familiar with the Buckeye State, even though he is based in D.C. now. Kyle, welcome to Snollygoster.
Thanks for having me.
There was a lot of speculation, a lot of hope on the part of Democrats and some labor leaders that Brown would run for governor. Instead, it looks like he's going to return or try to return to the U.S. Senate. Are you surprised?
A little bit. Yeah. And there was some reporting, I think it's probably a couple of weeks ago now, suggesting that, that Brown was gearing up to do this. And it seemed like if he was going to run for anything, it might have been more likely to run for governor. But all of our politics are so nationalized now, and maybe you could even see it in a candidate choice because Sherrod Brown might have actually had a better chance of winning the governorship just because it's maybe a little bit less nationalized of a race. But in terms of importance to Democrats nationally, having a competitive Senate race in Ohio is more important, I think, than having a competitive governor's race, because Democrats are trying to figure out a way to potentially try to win back the chamber next year. It's a really uphill climb. But in order to do so, they would need to win at least a couple of states that Donald Trump won by double digits. And Ohio is one of those. Yeah. And I do think Brown getting in does make this a more real race than it was before, although probably still uphill to some extent for Brown.
Yeah. And like the reports are that Chuck Schumer, the Senate Minority Leader, had visited the Columbus area twice in recent months, trying to convince Sherrod Brown to run for Senate. Do you think that's what it was, the lobbying on the behalf of Schumer and the chance that the Democrats can take back the Senate was the deciding factor for him?
Yeah, certainly could have been. There is already a governor's race going on. Amy Acton's been running for months. Obviously, Brown would have been a bigger figure in that race than Acton, but that would have been maybe a little bit more of a complicated move. Also, frankly, Brown has been someone who has national donor base, and yep. And maybe appealing to those folks or running for Senate is more appealing to those folks than running for governor. Governor is for Ohioans is obviously. It's a very important position, but there's no 50 state council of governors that sets national policy. There is with the Senate, and so that's why I talk about this sort of nationalized thinking and again nationalized politics. And Brown here is making a choice, I'd say, in support of the national party in some ways.
Yeah, like former U.S. Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, he said he liked being governor much more than being a U.S. senator because he could do more. He said also the late governor and U.S. Senator George Voinovich from here in Ohio thought the same thing. Do you think Brown just is more comfortable as a legislator and not as a chief executive, maybe, as he looked at the two jobs?
You know, hard to say. You do hear that a lot, particularly from people who have served both in as a governor and in the Senate. And the typical pipeline is you get elected governor. Often there's a term limit, and then you run for U.S. Senate. Yeah. And so, like, George Voinovich is a great example of how that would have worked. You know, Mike DeWine is the opposite in that he was in the Senate, he lost, and then he sort of rebuilt his career as a statewide elected politician, and is wrapping up two terms as governor after being two terms as attorney general. A lot of people in the Senate sort of talk wistfully about their days of being governor. I think Manchin is a great example of someone who was like that. Mark Warner, a longtime senator from Virginia who used to be governor in Virginia, he's sometimes talked about maybe going back and running for governor, although he's never taken any steps to do that. And interestingly, you have several sitting senators across the country, a Democrat Michael Bennett of Colorado, a Republican Tommy Tuberville of Alabama, Marsha Blackburn, Republican from Tennessee, who are actually running for governor from the Senate, which is again a little unusual. Mm-hmm. But you know, I don't know exactly why Brown decided to do what he did, but there is some feeling amongst people out there who have served in both offices that governor is sort of the more fun job. Now, of course, if Brown got elected governor, he'd be dealing with a Republican legislature in almost certainty. And so that sort of that maybe ties your hands a little bit too.
Yeah, as our current governor has found, even though he's a Republican, his hands are tied a lot by the Republican legislature, who they don't always agree. You know, I always say that politicians, considering running for a race, considering whether to run for re-election, it really comes down to a very simple calculus. Am I going to win? And you look at Vivek Ramaswamy, the Republican candidate for governor, former presidential candidate here in Ohio. He's already raised close to $11 million in his campaign for governor. His affiliated group has raised, I think, $15 million. He says he's willing to spend millions of dollars of his own money. Do you think that Sherrod Brown was scared off by that fundraising? Do you think he just says, I have a better chance of beating John Husted, the sitting senator, than I do this young, up-and-comer, wealthy candidate for governor?
It's possible, although as I look at the two races, yeah, Ramaswamy has raised a lot of money, but he's also a less proven candidate than John Husted is. I mean, Husted is not some sort of, I mean, I think Vivek Ramaswamy is sort of a flashier politician than John Husted is, but Husted's also been around for a long time and is sort of, in some ways, in comparing Husted and Ramaswamy, who are going to be effectively leading the Republican ticket in Ohio, Husted in the Senate and Ramaswamy is is essentially the presumptive Republican, not gubernatorial nominee at this point. Ramaswamy is more from the sort of kind of MAGA school. He's mm-hmm. sort of more of a newcomer to politics. And Husted, while not old by politician standards, and certainly not by Senate standards, you know, Husted's been around for a long time in Ohio politics, and his career certainly predates MAGA. So there's kind of a older school Republican in Husted and sort of a newer school Republican in Ramaswamy. The last two Senate winners in Ohio, J.D. Vance, now vice president, and then Bernie Moreno, also are kind of more from that sort of post-Trump Republican wing, and that they sort of made their names in Republican politics after Trump had emerged. Again, whereas Husted is sort of more of a throwback to me to Mike DeWine's and Rob Portman's of the world, even though Husted is perfectly allied with the president. I think it's more of a question of style as opposed to the actual sort of governing substance, because again, Husted has been pretty loyal to the president in a short time in the Senate.
Yeah, and he's only been there, a matter of months. And, we'll have to, I'm curious to see what kind of a federal candidate he is. He's got a long track record in state politics. And, John Husted, I just wonder how he's going to come across as a national candidate against Sherrod Brown. There's less of a contrast. I mean, Sherrod Brown he'll run as a populist again, I'm sure. And you could run against Vivek Ramaswamy, the billionaire. And you can't really do that with John Husted. He's been in politics for most of his career, all of his career. He's not a billionaire by any means. But so the style will be different. The campaign tactics will be different.
Yeah, and to me, kind of the most important thing in this race is something that's out of the hands of both Brown and Husted. It's like, what's the national environment next year? Mm-hmm. If it's like 2006 and 2018, years where Sherrod Brown won Senate races in Ohio, I think he would have a decent chance. But if it's not quite that level of Democratic wave year, then, you know, I think Husted probably be in fairly decent shape. And so, and that sort of political environment and sort of what that does to turnout and to persuasion among voters in Ohio, that to me is sort of the driving factor here. Now, of course, Husted and Brown are both going to want to find vulnerabilities with the other candidate and run the best campaigns they have. But, you know, what I think that Brown running does is that it sets up for Democrats the possibility of winning Ohio if the environment is right next year. Yeah. And, you know, that's an open question. Again, the midterm usually breaks against the president's party. It's just a question of how much.
Mm-hmm. And there's no gerrymandering involved in a statewide race, unlike the congressional races, which will be determined by the maps to a large degree. And of course, the thing to watch for with John Husted of a potential vulnerability is he is very closely tied to the Intel computer chip factory project just outside of Columbus here. And that project is, I'm not sure it's in jeopardy, but there's certainly some serious questions about its future. And if that were to fall apart in the next year or so, that would be something that, even though Brown, I think, supported it, I don't think he was actively a cheerleader for it, as John Husted was when he was lieutenant governor here.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing that maybe could turn from an asset to a liability again, mm-hmm. depending on how things develop over the next over the next year.
We keep hearing that voters want a new face. Sherrod Brown's been in office for 5 decades. John Husted, he's a youngster, been in office for nearly 3 decades. Not exactly new faces. What do you make of that? Not just here in Ohio, but around the country. Is there a thirst for new faces?
I think there certainly has been on the Republican side, most definitely, and I think Trump himself is a great example of that. And you know, obviously, he's been around for a decade now, and is basically the leader of the Republican Party. But when he emerged, he certainly was running against more established politicians for the presidential nomination in 2016, and voters opted to go with him. And some of the other substantial candidates in that year's race were also people who hadn't been elected office before. You know, Ben Carson, for instance. You know, the former doctor. You know, yep. has been a big person in conservative circles. He was also someone who had his moments during that primary. The Democratic side is a little bit different, or at least has been a little bit different in that I think Democratic voters have generally been more sort of trusting of their own kind of establishment figures and leadership, but that might be changing too. You know, one thing that's been a constant theme in polling this year is that Democratic favorability is really pretty horrible. And a lot of that is driven by Democrats themselves having a negative opinion of their own party. And I kind of wonder if that's going to manifest itself in candidate choices. I will say that you know, the two big statewide races coming up this year, the governor's races in New Jersey and Virginia, Democrats went with two sitting members of the U.S. House one former member of the U.S. House as their nominees in those races. Mikey Sherrill, a Democrat in New Jersey, and then Abigail Spanberger, former House member in Virginia. Those were very much choices that you would have expected at any time over the last couple of, you know, last decade or two in Democratic circles. It wasn't like they went with some sort of, you know, kind of dramatically new candidate. On the other hand, I think you maybe look at like Zoran Mamdani in New York City as the Democratic mayoral nominee and say, oh, okay, this guy's a little bit different. He's more of a left-wing candidate. And while he'd been in the state legislature, he was sort of more of a newcomer, certainly more of a fresh face than Andrew Cuomo, the former governor running in that race, although Cuomo had a lot of baggage. You know, there's not a lot of precedent for a senator losing and then coming back successfully and winning, although I don't know how often it's really been tried. But there was an example of Russ Feingold in Wisconsin losing in 2010, coming back in 2016, and he seemed to be leading in polls the whole time in Wisconsin. Then he ended up losing. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of this is a tricky task for Brown. And man, the reward for winning would be running again, yes, in 2028 in a presidential year. That, yeah, probably would be a more hostile environment than whatever 2026 is.
Yeah, so Democrats also, Brown himself, could be thinking, if we're going to beat Husted, we've got to do it now, because if we don't beat him, right, now, it'll be even tougher. For the presidential year.
And particularly, you know, this also, I mean, you know, would Husted prefer to run against someone else? I would think so. But at the same time, if you can win this race, you probably build a bigger national profile, because you're going to, you know, the race is just going to be, it's just going to be a hotter, mm-hmm, race than it otherwise would have been, I think, unless, you know, there was some new Democrat who sort of caught fire or something. But Brown is a more proven commodity. And the other thing is that if Husted wins this time, I'd say in 2028, he would be he wouldn't be challenged much at all.
No,
he can, you know, he just got appointed to the Senate. If he can prove himself in this race, I think he'd be, you know, good to go for probably a long career in the Senate.
Well, it will be for us political observers and political journalists and junkies. It's a really great race to watch. Two very well-known politicians, two very different politicians as far as their stances on issues. It will be interesting to watch. John Husted, the Republican, Sherrod Brown, the Democrat, running for U.S. Senate. Our thanks to Kyle Condick, managing editor of Sabatow's Crystal Ball, a political newsletter published by the University of Virginia Center for Politics. Kyle, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past 7 days. A week ago, President Trump wanted Intel CEO Lip-Bu Tan to resign over his business dealings in China and delays to Intel's chip factories, including the one under construction outside of Columbus here. Senator Bernie Moreno went a step further and suggested Tan and Intel might be guilty of fraud because of their delays with the Ohio plant and others. Intel's stock fell. And then on Monday, Lip-Bu Tan met with President Trump at the White House. We don't know what they talked about exactly, but it apparently went well because President Trump was full of praise for Tan on Truth Social after the meeting. He called the meeting, quote, very interesting, and he praised Tan's success and rise as an amazing story. Well, Intel's stock immediately rose, up 11% the past few days. So for quickly getting on President Trump's good side, Intel CEO Lip-Bu Tan gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. We will see how long he stays on the president's good side. That's a tough side to stay on. That'll do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Just tell your friends about us. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.